podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello, hello, here we go, it's the Copyright Podcast.
Hello everybody and welcome back to the Copyright Podcast. It is the Merseyside Derby Review. I'm glad we're doing this today because if we'd done it immediately, this show would turn out a lot different. And Dan might not be friends by the end of it. Dan, welcome back.
Thank you.
You said we wanted you back on for the review, mate, and thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy schedule for joining us as well, pal.
Of course.
As always, we're joined by Mick Moran, my partner in crime. Big happy birthday to you, mate. You know, looking younger every year, pal.
Don't know about that life. We're off the top of my head. It's getting worse. Like, well,
you me up some. I tell you what might have put age on you, pal. Saturday. So, yeah. I don't know where to start with it, boys. Merseyside derbies have been controversial for years. There's always something that happens. You know, even from a 0-0 perspective at Goodison, there's always something that happens. But a 2-2, and there's so many talking points. Mick, let's come to you first, mate. We started quite well, really, didn't we?
Yeah, I actually I was still running to the pub to watch the game and missed the first goal. So I was absolutely gutted. I had cheering and I was like, I hope to fuck that's not an Everton goal. Just absolutely legging it down the street. And then, yeah, great start. That's all you want in a derby. But then the Van Dijk injury and the whole was the offside scenario, the Pickford challenge, and then he goes off. And then obviously they score off a corner like, what was it, 10 minutes later probably. So it was just, yeah, it wasn't. The first half was good in terms of us like keeping the ball and doing well with the ball, but just stuff like that. Like if Van Dijk was on the pitch for that corner, maybe he probably edged that away. It's just one of them, and it was just you lose your talisman at the back like that, then you're always going to struggle, really.
Well, I mean, you're absolutely spot on. We'll come to that in more detail in a minute anyway, but like you said, Dan, the way the game started, it was quite frantic, but I felt like Liverpool had sort of the lion's share of the game at the beginning. You know, there's the initial challenge from Van Dijk on James Rodriguez to just thought, right, we're on for a derby here. And then Everton concede an early goal. And, you know, it was the way Everton have played, it was sort of like a bit of a soft goal to let in, really, wasn't it? The way Robertson had took it past the fullback and then squared it for Mane. Must have been quite disappointing from your point of view.
Yeah, obviously it's like worst. You've got all this excitement for the start of the game and then all of a sudden, bang, that. It's a bit of a shock. But I don't know, I feel like the first half, Everton definitely took a little bit, or at least the first half an hour, they weren't quite, you know, straight out the blocks, and Liverpool were just so intense. Like, passing was amazing. Like, you kept the ball, as you say, really well. You definitely deserved to be one up. Yerry Mina, maybe for the first, like, 20 minutes or so, was a little bit like, oh. I felt like there was a bit of shakiness going on just generally in the team. But then I do feel like we started getting more and more into the game and like started matching Liverpool a bit more. And, you know, we looked dangerous on the counters and stuff. And obviously like the Van Dijk incident with Pickford was, I actually texted our family kind of Everton group. And I was like, Pickford's going off. I thought that was going to be it. You know, like that was 1-0 down, wasn't it then? And I thought, like, oh, I can't believe this. What's he doing? I don't think, as all the pundits were saying after, it didn't look like there was any malice in it. He was just so fired up. And that's what, it obviously happens in, especially in derbies, doesn't it? I mean, like, how many red cards have there been over the years? It's kind of, you know, whether it's a Liverpool player or an Everton player, someone just, like, they're so amped up for the game that they get carried away and they're like, I'm having that ball, even though they don't need to kind of thing. And, yeah, I feel for like Van Dijk. I hope he's out for a while now, isn't he? And yeah, it's a shame.
Mick, Dan's just touched on a point there about Pickford. You know, we're not going to get into any, you know, slanging matches over Pickford on this show at all, because at the end of the day, I think Dan's just hit the nail on the head. His adrenaline's flowing, it's a derby. And maybe Pickford's got a point to prove more than anybody in this fixture, given the way he's performed in derbies in the past, you know, namely the arena or Anfield. But you know, taking the rivalries aside and the friendship that we've got with Everton, you've got to look at it as, I thought that was quite a rash challenge from a goalkeeper's perspective on the replay. But, I mean, it's just such heartbreak for us. to lose somebody like Van Dijk, and it does feel like when he went off, I felt nervous a little bit. Mm. Not because that's a slight on Joe Gomez or Joel Matip, because they've been fantastic for us, but they're always fantastic when they partner with Van Dijk, and I felt that Everton grew in confidence as well, didn't they? And rightly so, because Everton have been fantastic. And for us to lose the best defender, it went in Everton's favour, didn't it?
Yeah, of course. I mean, then you've got a corner straight away, like, you know, not long after, and straight away you feel like, ooh, without like Van Dijk's presence and height and all the rest of it and power in the box, it was, I mean, obviously, who knows whether Keane would have scored anyway, but, you know, Van Dijk's definitely a presence in the box that makes it more difficult. And then, yeah, I feel like after that, it settled down a bit, didn't it? And it was just like a real, I mean, I felt like it was such an exciting game. Like there was, as you say, there was so many talking points of so many moments, like, you know, Pickford then pulled off like two unbelievable saves. But Adrian, he pulled off a decent save, like Richarlison hit the post. You know, there was loads of stuff kind of going on end to end. And I mean, I was just like on the edge of my seat, so nervous the whole time.
You would be, mate. I mean, Mick, when we thought we should have had that penalty and, you know, Pickford, we all think that Pickford should have been sent off. I mean, maybe because of the history of challenges with VAR over the last 2 years and the level of inconsistencies up and down, is it? But how do you sum up your thoughts and feelings when you saw the incident?
It's I don't understand it. Like, I watched Match of the Day and listen to like Alan Shearer, and it's like, well, how can they can make the decision that it's offside? So why can't they then make a decision that that's serious foul play? I understand like Pickford's under pressure and whatever, he wants to, like Dan said, be like energetic and try and prove that he's good enough to be Everton's number one, England's number one, and I think he does get carried away. He's that type of character, isn't he? But for me, I don't understand why he comes out that fast. Like, if it was like a midfielder in the middle of the pitch, you get away with it because it's a free kick. But to do that in the penalty area after 5 minutes and potentially give away a penalty and maybe get a ball, get a red card, is a bit mad when you think, like, I know he's fired up. That, but Jesus.
No. That wasn't even to, like, excuse him in a way. It was just, like, that's the only reason I can think. Because, as you say, like, where Van Dijk was, I don't even think there was any, like, I mean, there wasn't even any major pressure for it. All he had to do was just go up to him and, like, stand there and hold him off. And then the whistle would have gone and it would have all been fine. And so it's just, no, it's horrendous. Like, all there wasn't one pundit that excused it or said, like, he should have stayed on the pitch, you know. And I don't know. I don't understand it either, to be honest. I thought he was going off. Like, you can't, and you shouldn't be able to do that and, like, you know, ruin someone's, like, potentially career by breaking a leg, or you know, same with like Richarlison's foul later on, that was like clearly a red card.
Yeah,
and then how can that be a red card? But yeah, Pickford's wasn't. That's the thing with the inconsistencies, that you're like, VAR's there to kind of stop those inconsistencies, which have been going on for years. You know, how many goals have you gone? You watched again afterwards, and it's like, oh, they were offside and they missed it. You know, and so I personally was like, oh, great, you know. VAR finally, like, goal line technology, some of those moments that, like, tennis, rugby, you know, you name the sport, basically they all have, like, they all have VAR, don't they? Cricket, you know, like,
and it does make
the game fairer, it feels like, because you're not, the game moves so fast now that for those, like, referees on the pitch to be able to spot everything is just impossible. But obviously now with there's teething problems, aren't there?
That's it, mate. I mean, it's one of those things that they get it so right in tennis, they get it right in rugby league, they get it right in cricket. And this is the biggest sport in the world. You know, it's the most watched sport in the world. And it's somehow in the biggest league, in the biggest sport in the world, they don't have it right. And it's fascinating to just see who's in charge of it all. And it raises another massive question, doesn't it, Mick? But every time there's an incident like this, you know, you look at the goal line technology with the Aston Villa Sheffield United game last season when the goal had, it should have been on, or it wasn't turned on. It's thing, shit like that shouldn't be happening, should it?
Yeah, and I think about the one a couple of weeks ago, Man United game, where they got a penalty after the referee blew the whistle, and it's like,
yeah,
so they can bring it back because it happened, the incident happened before the final whistle, but the fella in the wherever he is, Stockley Park's watching the monitor, David Coote, I think it was, and sees that tackle, can decide that it's offside, but then can't decide that it's serious foul play. And obviously Van Dijk's then gone off injured. I just don't understand why where the line's drawn. Is it if it's offside, you can then go and 2 foot to someone and you don't get a red card? Like I don't know.
No, but that's not the rules. Like the referee they had on BT Sport after, he was saying like, yeah, of course you can pull it back for foul play after something's happened. Like that happens all the time. And even like managers get sent off, don't they? You know, after the half's finished or whatever. Yeah. So those things happen. So I don't know. I'd be interested to see what his reasoning was. Like, you can't. I mean, you watch that. There's not a human like on earth, I don't think, who'd watch that and go, no, that wasn't dangerous. and the guys that, you know, ACL's like ruined. It's like,
yeah,
what's happening here? I do feel for you guys on that one. But then the offside one, like I'm sort of, you know, that there is a rule where that someone must have looked into that and gone, right, it is actually like a couple of millimeters or whatever offside, and it is ridiculous. But they obviously, you know, if they have a rule where it's like if you're a couple of millimeters off or a centimeter or 5 cents, you know, there has to be a point, and they've obviously just got it at like it's there. And if it's any margin over, it's offside, and that's just the way it is. So I would hope that, yeah, it's absolutely gutting for you guys, but you would probably end up with a decision that goes in your favour later in the season, or, you know, I don't know. I can understand you'd be gutted, though, because I would be as well.
Yeah, and like you said, you know, when we were talking before we started recording, Dan, you know, if you'd watch that game as a neutral, you'd be fuming because you don't want that to happen to yourself in another game. You think, right, that can happen in a Liverpool-Everton game. That can happen in a Spurs-Chelsea game. It can happen in Chelsea United, City, Burnley, or whatever. You know, it is frightening how those small margins can define certain things. But before we get to that last part, we've got to think about what happened beforehand, because obviously, Mick, we are 1-0 up. And then Everton obviously score from a set piece, which usually we're very good at defending set pieces. And Keane scores a header from, I think it was like 6 or 7 yards out, where he outjumps our defence, which, like Dan pointed out, probably wouldn't have happened if Van Dijk was still on it. And then obviously some people after the game were saying, if Alisson was in goal, he'd have got it. Is that just the agenda at the minute? Or how do you feel about it? Do you feel like he could have got it?
I don't know. Sometimes you build Alisson up to be this superhuman keeper, but he's not. But he's just a lot better than Adrian. When I seen it the first time, I did think Alisson probably saves that. And I don't know if that's just me, like I said, exaggerating Alisson's ability, but it's a good header. Like he's made good contact with it, and he's hit it very powerfully at the goal. And it's difficult to stop, because, like you said, how close he was to the goal, like 5-6 yards out. If your keeper saves it, you'd be clapping, saying what a save, like a world-class save. But
if it's 5-6 yards out, should he be coming to collect it? Should he punch it away?
Yeah, and if it's Alisson, he probably does that. That's the thing. It's just, it was the same like you said, Jay, when Van Dijk goes off, you get that nervous feeling. And if we're feeling it, the players are feeling it, I think, because it's not no fluke that when we started winning trophies, we got Alisson and Van Dijk. And without those two on the pitch, you've got severely less quality. So I think it is the little fine margins like that. But once Alisson's back in the team, I do think we'll feel a lot calmer back there, even without Van Dijk, because I think Matip and Gomez between them, not great injury-wise, but quality-wise, they can definitely do a job for us this season until Van Dijk's back.
Definitely, mate. And Dan, going into the game, going into obviously the break at 1-1, it was sort of like, well, we've definitely got a derby on our hands here, because there's so much happened in that first half. And like I said, Everton really, really grew into the game when Van Dijk had gone off. And again, like I said before, it's not a slight on Everton at all, because they've been brilliant all season. And regardless, I'm sure they still would have given Van Dijk a hell of a game anyway. But probably from your perspective as well as an Evertonian, I know obviously the injury to Van Dijk was horrendous and all that sort of stuff, but yourself, you might have gone, right, he's gone off now. This is a great chance for us.
Yeah, to be honest, at the time I didn't really think about that, because obviously you've still got like a really amazing team. So it was kind of, I just felt more that Everton were actually just starting to click a little bit more, and it was getting a more even match. But maybe with hindsight, maybe that was a factor. But yeah, no, it all started coming together more, and it just felt like it was such an exciting game. And then obviously you guys. You scored again. I mean, what a finish from Mo Salah. That was ridiculous. But again, what's Yerry Mina doing with that kind of nothing clearance? I feel like he should have just hoofed that up, but easier said than done when you're kind of running away. And, you know, he's obviously in a maybe in a slightly not the best position, but you can't, with someone like Mo Salah, like that is just in the same way that if Adrian had saved that header from Keane, it would have been like, wow, you know, what an unbelievable save. How's that even possible? It was the same with Salah. Like, you can't really criticise Yerry Mina for that because no one else is going to score that goal, like, outside of the foot. He didn't even lift his leg back, did he? He was just, like, in the bottom corner before you could... It was like, what just happened? I mean, he's such an amazing player. I love watching Salah, like, even if... even as a blue, he's just amazing.
I mean, me and Mick spoke before James Rodriguez made his debut at Everton. We thought we all had that feeling, didn't we? We said it on the last show that we thought that Rodriguez might not be able to cut it. And what he's done so far, he's been brilliant for Everton. He's fantastic. He plays some great balls at the derby. But what Dan's just mentioned there, Mick, is Mo Salah's just, you know, the ball sat up, he's gone, fuck this, I'm hitting it. Twats it in the far corner. You can see the elation on his face because he's got his 100th goal for Liverpool. And what, 17th player to get 100 goals for Liverpool, and he's not going to stop there.
No, he looks like a man possessed this year. I think when we were doing a few pods like during pre-season, I think out of all the players, he looked like the least fit, and we were worrying, like is he going to be ready for this season? Is he going to be sharp enough? Then he goes and gets a hat trick against Leeds, and he looks like he's a man possessed this year. Like that goal, like Dan said, like there's only a handful of people on the planet who can just think, right, I'm just going to absolutely bang this bottom corner. No questions asked. That's just, he is just unbelievable. Like you said, 100 goals.
I think the thing with him is it's not even, he didn't even think. It's just, his instinct is just, like he's such a natural footballer. You know, like when you see, to be honest, I think Rodriguez is the same. He's like, he's just a natural footballer. Like he gets the, you know, he just seems to have this kind of 3D vision of the pitch, all just always going on, and he knows where everyone is somehow. Same with Salah, like the vision and the run, you know, everything that's happening, he just like, he's always one step ahead of everyone else, it feels like. And in that case, he just, I don't know, it's just instinctive football, isn't it? When you watch players like that, like the Bergkamps of the world, you know, like those players that come along and you just go like, wow, they've got something that not many players have.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. And we, like I said, Mick, we go 2-1 up there, and I thought, right, we've got the capability here to see this out, and again, we just couldn't, could we? Again, another ball comes in from the left hand side, and if anybody's going to score for Everton, it's going to be Calvert-Lewin because of the form he's in. But again, I was frustrated because he out jumps Gomez. Robbo doesn't really seem to jump up for the ball either, and it's a great header because, like, the ball's coming over from one side and you've got to track back and still manage to get power in your neck to put the ball and direction on it. It's just a sign of a confident person at the minute. And I'll come to you first, Mick, about the conceding of the goal. Deflation, because I...
Yeah, especially with, I think it was, 80, when you had like 10 minutes left, and you could see, like, I was just saying, like, let's try and cut out the cross into the box. But it's hard when you've got, like, Digne, who's got like a wand of a left foot and can curl in balls like that, and it's just like when it's Calvert-Lewin up against Robertson, there's only one winner. And even still, it was an absolute monstrous jump, wasn't it? Like when it went in, I was like, you know what, fair play, great goal. Like what can you say? Like it's just one of them. You can't prevent it, even if Van Dijk's marking him, he might have even still scored. Like it's just one of them. He's just got a tremendous leap at that precise moment. And like we can't even have a go at Adrian for that one because there was no stopping that, the amount of power he got in it. And yeah, it was just then I was worrying that at Everton, like Dan was saying before, is Rodriguez gonna bag a fucking 95th minute winner and fucking kill us off? But yeah, we'll come to that little bit in a minute.
Calvert-Lewin on form, you know, hero at the minute, isn't he? Fantastic player.
Yeah. Oh, it was unbelievable. I feel like he had a point to prove as well after that. I don't know if it was like 10 minutes before that or something. There was that ball that came in and he literally just, he was there and he missed the ball. And you remember that chance? I mean, it was a tough chance and maybe Adrian would have like saved it anyway because he seemed like he was kind of there. But yeah, I reckon after that he was like, right, just keep firing them in. I'm going to get one. And like, it was such a great goal. Like, I think it was Rodriguez who just passed it straight down the line, and it was such a perfectly weighted ball. Dino, I don't even think he touched it. He just, like, first time in, boom. I mean, that's what you want to see, isn't it, from your striker?
Definitely. Like I said, from an Everton's perspective, you've got to look at it and go, fucking hell, we're playing some amazing football at the minute. And to do those types of plays against the Premier League champions, albeit, yeah, they don't have Van Dijk, but like you said before, you've still got to get through the midfield, and it's splitting passes like Rodriguez that is going to give you that ammunition this season. It's something that you've been lacking, and that just proved it. And Liverpool were, you know, because you had more, like you just said, you had more than enough chances to take the lead anyway. But like you said, squaring up 2-2 is just brilliant. And then I thought, well, that's it now. That my prediction's done. That's what's going to happen. there's yet more drama, which again, I feel sick talking about it. And I know we've touched on it beforehand, but mate, Mick, the Thiago pass was just essence of what that player is all about. Let's just talk about that first. I mean, he's looking one way and the ball goes the other.
Absolutely, just sexual, just unbelievable. Like, he's like he's shaping up to go like into midfield, and then just the sky's on the pass to play Mane. And the fact is, Mane knows he's going to play it because he runs back on side, definitely on side. and great ball. And then it's just, the thing is, like we touched on VAR, it should be cutting these discrepancies out, but if it's creating more grey areas, that's the problem. Like, it's, I don't know, all the old guards saying, oh, the advantage for the attacker, but I don't know how it works. I don't know how they're differentiating between fucking arm hairs or whatever. And really, it should be a goal, and we should be looking at Pickford again for another horrendous mistake, because that Henderson goal, this Lau goal, he should be just literally catching that, and easy.
Hendo fluffed it, didn't he? He fluffed the shot a little bit, and then Dan, from an Everton's perspective, you must have thought, for fuck's sake, Pickford.
Oh, massively. Yeah. Well, I was just like, I just can't believe let them cut in that easily. And again, I mean, it was similar to like the first goal almost in a way, like it was almost identical, like pull it back to that sort of 6 yard. And again, no one's like cutting it out or marking. And Pickford, I mean, I'm not a keeper, but like, I would have thought like after some of the saves he pulled off earlier in the game, was it Matip's header? I mean, like that save was just ridiculous. That was like Schmeichel-esque. It's like it was almost behind him, and like I don't know how he kept that out. So how he can do that, but that like fluffed shot from Henderson, he doesn't get both hands to it. It is, I mean, yeah. But with the offside thing, I don't know. There must be. Although actually, to be honest, after the whoever's in charge of the VAR, if he didn't send Pickford off earlier, you definitely start doubting like their judgment.
Absolutely, yeah. Because you think that they must be listening to what's going on. They must, you know, they must have stuff going on inside that office. They can't be shut off from the world, and they must look back at decisions and go, "Shit, we fucked up there." You know, just you know, at half time, reviewing what decisions they've made and maybe thinking about it again. They can't change it because it's been done.
Yeah.
Again, like you said before, you're going back changing things after final whistles now, and you know, people saying, "Oh, it was Mane's elbow that was offside." Well, you can't score your elbow, so does it matter? Because remember last season, it was all about where the toe was, and you had the armpit gate from bloody Firmino and Aston Villa. It's just unbelievable, isn't it? I can't believe that we're sat here still talking about it.
So is the actual rule that it's the arm now? It's just any part of the body?
It just looks like it's any part of the body, because the way they look at it is, well, if that part of the body is advantageous, then technically, the feet are more advantageous because they're connected to that part of the body in terms, you know what I mean? In terms of the whole.
So your momentum's already moving.
Yeah, that's past And I get that from that point of view, but when you're looking at the line and there's talk about which part they freeze framed it, and then some people were saying, well, you look at the angle of the camera, the white lines aren't parallel. If they were parallel, you'd get a straight line, and you'd get a straight line on the Everton line and Mane, and it would look completely different. And I get that as well, and it's just ridiculous. Now, for me, if it's got to be clear and obvious, hasn't it? That's the reason this shit was brought in, for clear and obvious, not for a hair's breadth. We were very lucky to get 3 points at Anfield last season because Wolves were denied a clear goal just for a toenail being offside, and it was I felt bad on Wolves then, because we were very, I'm even said on the podcast, mate, we were very lucky to get 3 points there. But again, like you said before, Dan, is this the balance? You know, you get some, you lose some. But I think what made it 10 times worse, the fact that we were going for 3 points against Everton to join them at the top of the league. The fact that it was last minute, again, you know, there was all these things, and all of a sudden, the euphoria, right? I can't wait to get on social media, I can't wait to text your mates, just fucking crumbled.
Yeah, it's just one of them, like you said before, Jay, it's the best league in the world, the fastest league in the world. Like, if you start bringing into it what momentum they've got, like if Mane's Romba Fonsard, then he's about to control the ball from Thiago and trying to go towards goal, of course he's going to be leaning that way. There's too many grey areas. Like, it needs to just be like, I don't know how they're going to fix it, but the precedent they've set is just horrific. And I don't know one fan of any club in the country who, if they said, oh, do you want to get rid of VAR tomorrow, they'd all say, yeah, I reckon, because it's slowing the game down, it's creating too many grey areas, and no one that seems to know what the rules are, which is, if we don't know how the fuck the referees know.
Do you not think it adds a little bit of excitement sometimes, though? Like, there's that, like in cricket and rugby as well, it's like, oh, same with tennis, you know, they ask, like, it's an important point, and has it hit the line, has it not? And you get this moment of like, whoa. Like, there is a side of it that, like, I don't mind some of that. Like, I think it does bring in some extra fairness sometimes. But as you say, it's these little moments like that. Hopefully over the next year or so, they'll be able to iron them out and get it kind of where everyone's on board. Because at the moment, there's, you know, I feel like even some penalty decisions and stuff, it's like, come on.
Yeah.
You know, there's loads of moments that you're just like, this is, who's making these decisions? But then...
That is it. Both of you have just hit the nail on the head there. Mick, yeah, we'd get rid of it, no problem, because then we can go back to the human element of the linesman and the referee and the fourth official all making those decisions. Otherwise, what's the point of them being on the pitch? Absolutely. Because we might as well just take them off the pitch and we'll just let a computer do it all. But like Dan has just said, it's not the technology, it's the people running it. And if the people running it can interpret the rules the right way, and they just set a precedent, right, this is how it fucking goes, that's not a penalty, that's a penalty. It's this part of your arm, it's the shoulder, where's the cut-off point? That's all we need. And then VAR would work brilliantly the same way goal line technologies work. Well, up until the Sheffield United Villa game, it's been brilliant since day one, hasn't it?
Also, why can't they have like a 20-second rule? They've got, you know, or 15, whatever it is, like really short. You've got this much time. You've got to look at it really quickly and just make your mind up, because fair enough, the ref might have missed something, but don't spend ages like with your ruler out measuring like millimetres and keep the game flowing. Maybe that's like a way around it.
Correct, man. And if you've got to take that amount of time on a decision, then it's clearly inconclusive and just let it go as it should have done. You know, we've so many things, isn't there? We've all fell victim of VAR decisions, and we've all gained from VAR decisions. And 1 minute we're saying it's a lot of bollocks, next minute we're saying, oh yeah, that works and it's right.
Yeah,
you do win some weeks and you lose some weeks. I'm sure there'll be another decision this week, this season, Mick, where we shouldn't have had the lion's share of it, and it'll balance out hopefully. Yeah. But yeah, something needs to happen. And I'd have taken the draw and the last minute disallowed goal if it meant Virg not being injured.
Yeah,
I think like Dan said, if it's all this shite going on is for the betterment of the game in the long run, say like in a year's time, like you just said, Jay, if it's like, right, these are the rules, we've learned our lesson, we've had a shit show for a couple of years, these are the rules, if stick by them, we know what we're doing now. If that is finally the end game, then I'm happy with it all. I'm happy as long as all the decisions are 90% right, rather than now where it's kind of like, it's mostly like 50-50, isn't it? Sometimes where you're like, is that a pen? Isn't it a pen? Is it offside? Is it not? And it's like you said, Jay, it's someone's sat in front of a screen, like poring over it, going, is it offside? I don't even know myself. Probably that's what they're probably doing, going, ref, I haven't got a fucking clue. Just tell me what I'm doing. I haven't got a fucking clue what's going on. And it's just, if it comes through that in a year's time, that we're all going, right, we went through that, all that shite for this, then fair enough. But it just stings at the moment when it's a bad decision like that goes against you, and especially in the last one of a Merseyside derby, it's hard to take.
But Dan, in terms of you guys now obviously on the brink of losing to then obviously getting a point and keeping you at the top of the table, so to speak, you must be delighted.
Yeah, like obviously kind of felt like we got away with it, especially with that last last couple of minutes of drama. But again, like if it's sort of in my head, it kind of felt like, okay, that's sort of a fair result. Like, but take, I mean, in a way, sort, you know, we hit the post, there were a few other chances. I know Pickford pulled off some saves, but it was an exciting game. And in a way, I was like, I was obviously absolutely made up, as I'm sure every Evertonian was. And yeah, just move on to the next one and crack on, really.
Absolutely, mate. And listen, you know, as even as Liverpool fans, Everton deserve to be where they are right now, and they're playing some fantastic football. And it's great for the city, the fact that both football teams are playing really well at the minute, and they are at the sort of up there, and hopefully Liverpool can catch you up a little bit this season. But again, the season does look very, very bright for Everton. It really, really does. And like you said, Mick, we had a joke, didn't we, at the beginning of the season. We'd like to see Everton maybe win a trophy if we get knocked out of one. So, yeah, go and win the League Cup, mate.
Yeah, thanks.
Honestly, I hold no ill will towards Everton. Like, I want the city to do well. Adam, I'm happy for Everton to win a trophy. Like, I know, so I've got some mates who'd be like, oh, I wish they get relegated. And if it happened, I probably would celebrate a little bit. But, to be honest, if push came to shove, then I would. But if you just won a trophy, I wouldn't be like, oh, fuck off. Like, it wouldn't bother me. I'd probably be happy a little bit because it's been a long time for you, isn't it? But yeah, I think yous are going to do well this season. Like, we touched on Rodriguez and all the signings you've made. Yous look like that was the first time since we touched on the last podcast since 2010. Where he's actually made a fist of a derby, where it's been like not just shut up shop and hope to nick a goal off a corner. Like, he's actually played football and he's looked like a good cohesive team. And if you just keep, as long as you keep Ancelotti there and keep making little signings every transfer window, I think he's be up there, definitely top six in the next year or two. Mm.
Definitely, mate. I want to get both of your perspectives on something. Now, because the weekend was quite interesting because of the derby result, and you know, Twitter sphere and face pest were going bananas, weren't they, in terms of like the rivalry? Because you had a lot of disgusting comments that were coming out from both sets of fans. There was lots of things that were controversial, namely a Liverpool Twitter account going to Parliament as a fucking petition to get Jordan Pickford arrested or something, which was absolutely hilarious.
What?
Yeah, I'll send you the link, mate. It's fucking hilarious. The one big bloody thread, and oh yeah, it's so fucking stupid. But
wow,
the stuff that was coming out from both sides in terms of the poison was horrible, because I felt really uncomfortable. I'm not the type of person who will just comment and call out rival fans because of shit like that, because it's one of those things where you just let the game happen. The game's happened, friendly derby, as they like to say. But it just seems over the years it's got more and more poisonous. And everyone has that set of fans that are like that. And it's a very, very minute set of fans. And I'm sure if we were all together in a pub like you were, Mick, you know, it was all happy and whatever and banter flowing. But there was no fight or anything like that, was there? It's just hard at the minute with what's going on, because the Liverpool are Premier League champions. They've, you know, won a lot of trophies the last couple of years. And Dan, from your perspective, because we know you and we know you're not that type of Evertonian, but it's a shame that does still go on a little bit, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's awful. I mean, rivalries and banter and all the rest of it, that's like such a part of all sports, isn't it? You know, you've got your little tribe that you support, and you wind your mates up, and you know, my uncle's a Man U fan, we have loads of banter, you know, everyone does that. But it's like when it gets to the point that you start crossing those lines and it turns like really vitriolic and like aggressive, and I mean, fights obviously is one thing, but it just feels like Twitter and like social media in general, it's just like a little, it's just a microcosm of what happens at the game sometimes, I guess. And it's like they start like going off on one, and there's no one there to like slap you, or, you know, no one's going to retaliate in that way. So you kind of, it opens up, I don't know, this box of like whatever you want to say, you can say it without any real repercussions. So I feel like maybe those people who maybe wouldn't say some of those things, now they feel like they can because they're hiding behind the screen. And I don't know, I haven't seen the comments. The only thing I saw was loads of Liverpool fans saying, like, Ev Vaarten, like, VAR, and, you know, which is just, I just thought that was funny. Like,
yeah, because we got it last year, didn't we? Quite a bit.
Liverpool, but that's just banter, you know, that's like, Scousers have got a good sense of humour. I was like, oh, that's fair enough, like, that's brilliant. But yeah, if it starts getting really vindictive and, like, threatening and, you know, just mean, then it's like, I don't know, I don't really see the point in that. But then that's just some people, isn't it? You can't, not even just football, just in life in general, there are some people out there who just, they want to cause trouble and like have a go at people, and they feed off that, like, conflict, basically. They just want that conflict to be happening and fighting and all that, yeah.
Mick, I mean, you see it all the time, don't you? Because you're obviously with monitoring the Cop-Ike's Twitter feed. So it's sometimes it can get quite upsetting, the shit that they say to each other, especially when it gets personal.
Yeah, it's like Dan said, it does cross a line sometimes. And I think it's, for me, I think it's like it's an age thing. Like people that have grew up, maybe like under 20s, who've grew up with social media. And because Everton haven't done great recently, in the last couple of years, I've won a trophy for a while. I think it does get a bit sour from that, and I think they get too easily wound up by things on Twitter. And like Dan said, it goes a bit too far. It is a bit mad. Like Liverpool lose, I stay off Twitter. It's easy. Just don't go on it. I know you're bad for it, Jay. You go on.
Really bad.
And end up having getting into little debates with people. But I just stay off. Like, it's just go, oh no, we've got lost. Fuck it, I'm not getting on social media. But people, I think, like Dan said, people love it. People like that aspect of like just having these little scraps on Twitter. And it's just like, is it honestly worth it? Like spending an hour of your time just chatting to some random fella from across the globe about fucking shite.
But because also, like, obviously, like, as an Everton fan, having not really won anything for so long and being in the same city as a team that has been so successful, of course it's hard, because like a Liverpool fan can always just come back and go like, you guys haven't won anything, and you can't argue with that. Like, we just haven't been as successful as you guys. So the big thing to do, or, you know, like the adult thing to do, is just to go like, yeah, we haven't, like, fair enough, you're a better team and you have been for years. Like, that's just the plain fact. There's no point us saying like Everton are better than Liverpool, because it's just it hasn't been true. Maybe this season things are going to be different, but, you know, just being honest and like being able to take criticism for a team, that's also like takes way more courage in a way than just going like, ah, you guys are whatever, you know, and having a go and stuff. Like, but I can understand, like, when if Everton is literally like, or any team is your entire life, and someone's having a go at it, then obviously you do take it personally, which I love about football, that people get so passionate and so into it. But as you say, it's just that moment when it starts feeling like you're taking it so personally, it's almost as though someone's offending your mum. You know, it gets to that point where it's almost like, if you say one more word against Everton, I'm going to lose my shit. It's like, hang on a minute, let's just contextualize this a little bit. It is a football match. Like, it is a football game. It's a game, you know, both sides. Like, but then we've all been on the pitch playing football, and like, even though you can be a very calm person in your life, you're playing football and you can end up getting really annoyed with someone. And of course you do get aggressive. Like, I mean, things happen on the pitch sometimes where you're like, whoa, what's he doing? He's normally like the most chilled out person ever. And he's like in someone's face saying like, you... So, you know, it's a nice way to get all that, those, like, you know, where every human feels aggressive sometimes. Like, so it's good. It's a good place to get those feelings out. But like, yeah, feel for it when people are getting trolled and stuff online. That's not good. And the footballers as well, some of the abuse they must put up with. Like, I dread to think Jordan Pickford, if he has social media, like, he must be getting a real, like, rough time of it at the moment.
Yeah, I think that's where it gets, again, even more over, you know, too far over the line, isn't it? When you're sounding somebody out on social media and giving them abuse for it. At the end of the day, we all make mistakes in life and stuff like that. Imagine if you fucked up in your job and some random would go, oh, you didn't get that fucking spreadsheet in on time, or, you know, saying to you, Dan, oh, you fucking failed on that drum part, didn't you?
No, honestly, on social media, sometimes we will, like, you know, 99% of it is obviously people who are just there to be positive and, like, sort of say what your music means to them or whatever. But you do get like people who literally go like, you guys are so shit, and start having an absolute go at you. And I just write back sometimes. I'm like, oh, really? Thanks for your criticism. That's great. Great that you took the time to let us know that. I mean, some people that you like, you're actually sat there at home, like, just telling people how shit they are. Like, how is that? Why are you spending your time doing that? But that's just...
At the bottom of Dan's tweet, it says, sent well at the MTV Music Awards. Like that. So fair play, Dan. No, yeah. but Dan, you're absolutely spot on there, mate. You know, you're in the spotlight with what you do for a living, and you know, albeit you've been very, very successful at what you do, and everybody, you know, for that one comment of shit, you're, there'll be another 1,000 comments that are just really, really positive about what you do. So it's,
well, you just have to ignore it. And but like, have you seen the documentary about the, I can't remember what it's called. It's the six. It's about like Beckham and Nicky Butt and all that. It was on Netflix. You know, it's about them all going to school together, kind of like, and growing up and all that, and then becoming obviously like the amazing team that they were in the like late 90s and early 2000s and stuff. And they and when Beckham did he get sent off in an England match or something, and like this, what he went through from the press. I mean, obviously this was kind of before social media, but like press and stuff literally were just hounding him, and you know, almost like death threats at home and stuff like that, and people outside his house. You know, it's that, it's those moments where it's like, you know, no sportsman, well, no one in general should ever like have that kind of, it's not like they've murdered somebody, you know, like, or they're not a pedo, they're not, you know, there's nothing like, then it's just the game of footy, and yes, they made a mistake, as you say, but it's just mad. Like, people need to take a step back sometimes and just, yeah,
that's too right, mate. Well said. A good comparison as well. Mate, we've just obviously yesterday the news had broke that Van Dijk will, you know, there's no 100% confirmation out of how long he'll be out for. I think it's a case of we'll drip feed the bad news because everyone's so broken out. But it does look like he's going to be out for a long period of time, doesn't it? How are you feeling in about that for a start? And number two, how do you think we'll cope?
It's difficult, isn't it? Because he's literally like, his arrival has made us win all these trophies and made us so successful. So without them, it's going to be difficult, like really difficult, especially like I said before, Gomez and Matip, between them, injury-wise, aren't great, and they're not on the pitch as much as they should be. So we're going to see Fabinho back there a lot of the times, and we're then going to miss Fabinho's energy in midfield. So it's going to be a whole knock-on effect. So it's going to be, we just need him back ASAP. I don't know if that's going to be this season, but even if he comes back maybe the last 5 games or whatever, maybe we need to go into the market in January for a centre-back. Maybe this forces our hand a little bit. But
yeah, I think that's a good point that you just made there, mate, because a lot of people, after, you know, clamouring for people to Santiago, and then we got him, and then obviously Jota comes in as a big surprise, which was great, and then everyone was in saying, right, we need a centre-back, and it wasn't addressed. You know, people can make their minds up about that, but I think you are right there, mate. I think January now, especially with us losing Van Dijk, we're going to have to bring somebody in, because we can't, you know, they get no slight on Matip and Gomez, but their injury records the last couple of years are not great, are they? And we can't afford to be, you know, putting Fabinho in there, because he does such a good job in midfield anyway. He'd do a good job in defence like he has done, and he's proved it, but it's not his position, and we don't want to be putting in an unknown, and especially when we're fighting to retain the Premier League again. It's going to make sure that the Premier League isn't as close this season, isn't it?
Yeah, what's that saying? Attack wins your games, defence wins your titles. That's literally it. And that's, since we got Alisson and Van Dijk, we went on to win a load of things. And it maybe puts us a couple of pegs down us from favourite to retain the title, because his absence is going to be huge. Like, I just hope Matip and Gomez can just go, right, fuck it, let's just prove that we don't need Van Dijk at the back, because they're all fighting for to be next to him at centre-half. I just hope that they can. I know Matip played really well in the derby. Gomez has not been great recently form-wise, but he's only 23, and I just hope he can step up to the plate and just prove out to everyone in the league how good he is.
Well, Dan touched on something, didn't he? It's great that we've got a rival fan on here at the minute, because Dan says, you know, even with Van Dijk going off, we're still a formidable team to go up against, even though it might give the opposition a little bit more confidence. Hearing Dan say that, does that give you a little bit of a, well, if the rival fans are thinking that, maybe we should be thinking that?
Yeah, I think there will be people who, like, there's going to be people, like, opposition strikers are going to be like, right, it's going to be easier without Van Dijk, and of course it is, that's common knowledge, but Matip's still a good player, and so is Gomez. It's like I said, it's just keeping them fit. Like, they're both good quality. It's just that every tackle they go in for, you wince, thinking, oh, you're going to come out injured. That's the thing, and we're going to be like that for the rest of the season now, pretty much. So it's going to be a it's going to be a long slog. But in terms of January, maybe we could sign someone. I just don't know who. And I don't, like, people saying we need to address centre-backs. We didn't really. We had three centre-backs and then Fabinho, who can slot it in there. And who can predict a career, potentially career season and an injury for Van Dijk? That can't be predicted. And Klopp's not going to bring someone in just for the sake of it. So maybe this does force his hand, and I just hope Matip and Gomez are up to the task.
Yeah. And Dan, from your perspective in terms of the injury to Verge, obviously it's a very, very serious one. And there's always been, when players have these types of injuries over the years, they never really come back the same player, have they? I mean, Van Dijk had ligament damage in his ankle for Southampton and then obviously came back and he became obviously the world-class player that he is. But we've seen it with Danny Ings. He had a couple of really bad knee injuries at Liverpool and then didn't really fulfil it at Liverpool, unfortunately, but then he's flying with Southampton. We've had the Ox, who had a knee injury. Some people say he hasn't been the same since the injury. What do you make of these things? Do you think it depends on the player and the mentality? And in that case, we should be all right when Virgil comes back because he is that type of player?
I don't know. I think, like, Gomez was the same, you know, like when he, the first, like, you know, I don't know how many games, but it definitely, I don't know whether he's still back to like what he was before it, but he's definitely getting closer. I just think it takes time, doesn't it? Like being away from like playing in the Premier League, it must take a while to get your brain like and your body back to that sort of insane level of fitness and sportsmanship or whatever. And I'm sure like Van Dijk's, if has he been through it before, you said, with Southampton?
Yeah, he had the ligament damage on his ankle.
So, he came back and obviously, it's, you know, Van Dijk. Like, so you would hope that you've probably got amazing doctors and he'll have the best people working on him, the best physios, like, for his rehabilitation and all the rest of it. I'm sure he'll come back and, you know, you'll be fine. But I just thought Pickford must be feeling so bad.
Yeah.
Because, like, no football player wants to ever hurt anyone else, you know, like, that they don't play football for that reason. Like, I'm sure he sent some nice flowers around to him or something.
And that's it. That's
sorry, it. Mate.
With a signed goalie glove or something.
Yeah.
That's the thing, mate. You just hit an alley out there, mate. Nobody wants to injure another player, do they? And like you said, the amount of crap Pickford gets anyway from everybody and questioning for England, questioning for Everton and the mistakes he makes. And the last thing you want is that. And yeah, again, let's just hope. From your perspective, Dan, Pickford picks himself up, excuse the pun.
Yeah,
you
know, yeah, yeah.
Don't want
big
that.
Time.
So, well, that is our review. We could go on for ages about VAR and stuff like that, but it has been very eventful. Hopefully Van Dijk does come back as quick as possible. Speaking of coming back, Dan will be back when we do the reverse fixture at Anfield, when hopefully we might have some fans back in by then, but I doubt it.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah, and we'll come back for the preview and the review of that. Dan, any updates in terms of Wombat stuff for those that missed the last episode?
No, we just had a song out with a DJ called Weathen that came out on Friday, so that was nice to put out. And then got another song coming out with another DJ in a couple of weeks. Bit of an EDM phase featuring on people. We start recording our album in 2 weeks.
Excellent.
So that's it, really.
How excited are you for this one?
Yeah, very excited. That our producer just tried to call me then. yeah, no, can't wait. It's gonna be a good one, hopefully.
Yeah, mate. Well, if it's anything like the last one, mate, you'll smash it again. But again, big thanks for coming on the show. We really appreciate it, mate. And again, you're all right coming back for the Anfield one as well, aren't you?
Yeah. See you here.
Anytime you want to come on as well, mate, it'd be great. Everton, keep going. We'll want to get you back on to chat about it. Mick, any birthday plans today? Do you know anything?
Going for a little meal and celebrating being 31 years young. That's all I can do. Still trying to get over Saturday, to be honest.
Turn your phone off. Well, that's my Pipe Podcast. We appreciate everybody who's watched it. Please give us a like, subscribe, leave a comment in the box below. Let us know what your thoughts. Check out our famous fans interview with DJ Spooner. Absolutely amazing interview with that lad. And check out the one with Harvey as well from Soul Sally Crew. Dan, thank you very much. Mick, thank you very much. And Mick, what's the line?
See you next time.
Podcast Network.